Hi, Michaela Lafrac here. The podcast you are about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. The Summer Olympics in Paris begin this Friday, July 26th. For more than 2 weeks, athletes from all over the world will compete, including three Vermonters. Then the Paralympics start in August. Today on the show, we'll hear from a Paralympic athlete and the head of a Vermont-based foundation that supports athletes like him. Also traveling to Paris for the Olympics are sports writers and commentators. They'll capture the action and bring it back to all of us. One of those writers is Peggy Shin from Rutland. She's a writer for TeamUSA.org, and she joins us now live from Paris. Peggy, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here. It always is nice to be connected to Vermont when I'm traveling.
Well, we feel very chic and international talking to somebody in Paris right now. How was the trip?
The trip was remarkably smooth. My flight was even early. Had quite a few snafus once I got here. I was delivered to the wrong hotel, but things are working out. You just have to take a deep breath and put a smile on your face and carry on.
And you have been through this before. How many Olympics have you covered?
This is my eighth. I started in Vancouver in 2010.
Wow. Okay. So you know how this is going to roll. You know the rodeo. All right. So you've been to eight. What is the most memorable? Is there one Olympics that stands out for one particular reason or another?
Well, they all have their own, fun memories, but the first Olympics you go to, everybody says the same thing, from an athlete to an official to a journalist. It's your first Olympics. It's the first time you're exposed to it, kind of the awe and wonder. In Vancouver in 2010, I remember something amazing happened every day. Like one day I ran into Phil Liggett in an elevator in a hotel. Phil's a longtime commentator with the Tour de France. And I was like, oh my God, I'm staring at Phil Liggett and I'm actually chatting with him and he gave me a ride. Seeing, people, your idols win gold medals or silver medals or bronze medals or just, perform their best. The first Olympics definitely stand out. I've had some really interesting Olympics with the last three being held in Asian countries and the last two being held during a pandemic. Some not so fun memories from those, but being able to come to the Olympics is really special. And I always try to remember that.
I must have been so unique. Tokyo in 2020 and where's the other one in 2022? I'm forgetting.
Beijing in 2022.
Beijing, of course. Yes. Wow. That must have been wild. Well, with so many different events going on, how do you prioritize what stories to cover, what events to go to?
Well, so I write for TeamUSA.com, which is the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee's website. So we're focused on the sports where American athletes have the best chance of winning a medal. My specialty tends to be swimming, and there are two kind of mainstay sports for the U.S. during the Summer Olympic Games. There's swimming, which is typically the first week, and then there's track and field, which is typically the second week, although I just heard in L.A. in 4 years they're switching those. So I will be kind of anchoring the swimming and coverage because we typically have so many medals in that, with Katie Ledecky and Caleb Dressel and Simone Manuel.
I was like, if she get into swimming, I have no doubt she can do it, but that'd be impressive.
No, Simone Manuel's like, I'm the other Simone. but it's super fun. Swimming, there's usually three to four events a day, and the Americans, are winning more than their fair share of medals. So I'll probably be there the first week mostly, but then I also like to get to cycling. And I'm really excited to go to tennis because I'm a tennis fan and I want to see what Roland Garros, the site of the French Open, is like. I want to cover equestrian because that's being held in Versailles and I want to see Versailles. And there's a new sport that's making its debut in Paris, and that's the sport of breaking. And people of my age will remember it as break dancing, which is not what it should be called. It's actually breaking. And it's truly an amazing sport. It's got American roots. In the culture of hip hop, and there's a lot of different claims to how it first started, but generally it got going in the 1970s in the Bronx. And what these athletes can do is simply amazing. During a Team USA media summit in New York in April, I got to witness one of Team USA's breakers do one of his amazing spins right in front of me on a carpeted floor. And I think the breakers are really going to steal the games here in Paris.
I'm so excited to watch that one. And there's another new sport as well, right? Kayak cross?
Excuse me, what? Okay, there are so many sports, I have to admit. I
just learned this this morning via the Google. So embarrassingly. That is quite
I'm just learning of it now.
That's why you're double fact check me on this. And then I also learned that there's a couple sports that folks might be more familiar with that had just made their debut in the last Summer Olympics, and they're coming back. So things like surfing and skateboarding and sport climbing.
Yes, and those were really fun to watch, although I put my hand up to cover surfing because it's in Tahiti.
Oh, wow.
I did not get my wish granted to go to Tahiti, but lucky journalists who get to go there. But I am looking forward to seeing skateboarding and sport climbing again. And I think those are going to be at a venue in front of the Eiffel Tower. So I think that's going to be incredible to watch.
Oh, I'm sure it will. If you're just joining us, we are speaking with Peggy Shin. She's a Rutland-based writer for TeamUSA.org, and she is in Paris for the Olympics right now. If you've trained at a high level for a sport, if you've been to the Olympics or have been watching them for years and years and want to share a story or memory with us, you can call in at 800-639-2211 or email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Peggy, let's talk about the Vermont athletes that are there in Paris with you.
Yes, Elle St. Pierre, Billy Bender, and Ilona Mahar in three different sports. Elle is competing in track and field, so that will be the second week. And she actually qualified in two events, the 1500 and the 5000. She actually won the 5000 at Olympic trials in June. But I read that she's only competing in the 1500, and the semifinals of that are on August 8th with the final on August 10th. Mm. And then Billy is competing in rowing, and he's going to be in a pair. So a pair in rowing is two guys in a boat, no coxswain, and they each have one oar. A double scull, they would have two oars. So there's a lot of boats in rowing. You kind of have to know the sport to know what's going on. But Billy is rowing with another Dartmouth alum, Oliver Bubb, and their heats start July 28th. So on Sunday? I guess they start Sunday, and they'll be competing all next week, and hopefully they'll make it to the finals. Mm. Billy and Oliver were finished fifth at the 2023 World Championships, so they stand a chance for a medal. And then Ilona is competing in rugby, and that... Let's see, I wrote that down here. Quarterfinals in rugby are July 29th for women, with semis July 30th, and the finals later on July 30th. And Ilona is really popular in social media. You should go to her Twitter account. And she's really tried to make rugby and women's rugby in particular very popular. And she's really good on camera. So hoping they get a medal this time.
Mm. Well, we'll be cheering all three of them on. Three members of the 592 members of Team USA are from Vermont. We spoke with Billy Bender on Vermont Edition a couple months ago after he qualified for the Olympics. We'll link to that article on vermontpublic.org in the show notes for today's show, as well as a conversation we had with a Runner's World journalist who co-wrote a book with Elle St. Pierre's coach about running, and there's lots of interesting information about her in it. All right, opening ceremonies, one of my favorite parts of the Olympics. What are they like? What's the energy like?
So the energy at opening ceremony is really fun. It's this big party atmosphere. It's always great to go, and they have, you know, it's like going to a rock concert because, you know, I heard Lady Gaga might play, or she might be playing at the closing ceremony. But this Paris Games is going to be completely different. The opening ceremony, rather than the athletes parading into a stadium, they're each country by country going to be floating down the Seine. So I'm curious how we're going to cover it. I'm curious what the energy is going to be like. Are people going to be lined up and down the Seine? Really excited to see how they pull it off.
Oh, that's incredible. And there's been a lot of press around the Seine recently and how clean or not clean it is. Can you fill us in on that?
Yeah. So, okay, the media always has to latch on to some bad news thing during the games. And I know that France has worked really hard to clean up the Seine in the past several years. And I'm not an expert on this, but I also know, like in Vermont, when we have rain, we have a lot of rain, we have water quality issues as well, where the sewage treatment plants can't keep up with the storm runoff. So we have overflow into the rivers, and we wouldn't go swimming in our Vermont rivers after a heavy rainstorm. So I think the main concern here is that there will be a heavy rainstorm, but we're now getting into a very dry period. So, you know, if there's a problem with the water quality, they have backup plans, and the marathon swimmers and the triathletes can swim elsewhere. I've only seen the Seine from a car so far, and it looks lovely. So who knows how it's going to go.
And how do you navigate the Olympic Village? Are you allowed to go back there as a member of the press?
No. So people always ask me, how's the Olympic Village? The Olympic Village is sort of a misnomer. You know, people think of Courier and Ives, a cute little, you know, village where everybody with the Olympics is. It's like not, it's called the Athlete Village. And only the athletes are allowed in the Athlete Village. The press, they're allowing us to go in tomorrow for like 2 hours, and they'll take us on tours and make sure that, you know, we keep our hands to ourselves and don't talk to anybody we're not supposed to talk to. So they really keep the athletes sequestered. So Paris itself, the entire city, would be considered the Olympic Village. And, you know, it's a city of what, 2 million people, 8 million people? It's not an Olympic Village. But the vibe here, I haven't really sensed a vibe yet. I'm staying out in the La Défense area, which is west of downtown Paris on the other side of the Seine, and it's where all the tall buildings are. I got there yesterday morning in a rainstorm, and unless I were here for the Olympics, I would not know that the Olympics is going on. There's no signage, there's no banners, there's no nothing. So I'm excited to spend more time tomorrow and the following days exploring downtown Paris itself. This morning, I just took the metro in to the main press center. I spent most of the day with the IOC session and the Salt Lake City 2034 Winter Olympic Game bid. And that was actually approved today by the IOC at 12:20 p.m. local time. So the Olympics are coming back to the U.S., of course, in L.A. in 4 years. But the Winter Olympics will be coming to Salt Lake City in 2034, which is really exciting.
Yes, one that many Vermonters will have a close eye on. Let's take a call. We have Peter in White River Junction on the line. Peter, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, great show. Peggy, wonderful to hear your voice. I wanted to ask you what you think of the Salt Lake bid. And was there a lot of countries and nations bidding against Salt Lake?
And before you jump in, Peggy, Peter, I see here in the notes that you have been to many Olympic Games as an announcer.
Yeah, that's right. Starting with ABC and Lake Placid in 1980, and have done both TV and public address, and been to quite a few games with Peggy. But everybody must be thrilled, Peg, about the Salt Lake win.
Yeah, so, okay, Peter, I'm so glad to hear your voice. And you guys should have Peter on and not me. He is a legend.
Peter, you're up next.
A legend, not just in Vermont, but worldwide.
We're getting your info.
He's going to be inducted. We just got an announcement today. He's going to be inducted into the Vermont Ski and Snowboard Hall of Fame, like the actual Hall of Fame, not like the Journalism Award, the Hall of Fame. So congratulations, Peter.
Congratulations.
Anyway, the Salt Lake City bid, it was a fantastic bid. I mean, they are appealing to, well, first of all, Utah, I learned 80% of the population of Utah is in favor of hosting the games, and 100% of their elected officials. And so they're appealing, you know, there aren't people standing up and going, no, no games. They're like, Utah wants the games back. They're really focused on continuing the legacy that Salt Lake City started in 2002. And they were really excited about the idea of a very, you know, a games that's very closed in, like all the venues are within an hour of each other. So the IOC was very excited about it. You know, 83 yes votes, 6 no votes. And, you know, there was some palpable energy in that room today that they're excited. Everybody's excited for the games to come back to Utah. Does that answer your question, I hope?
Well, Peter, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to get you on soon. Thank you for telling us about your work and congratulations. And Peggy Shin, we are so glad that you were able to join us all the way from Paris, France for the 2024 Olympic Games. So excited to catch up with you maybe in another week or two. And good luck.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed chatting with you.
Me as well. The Summer 2024 Paralympic Games are coming to Paris soon, beginning August 28th through September 8th. What's it like to prepare and compete in the Games as an athlete? Well, here in Burlington, the Kelly Brush Foundation supports people with spinal cord injuries and helps to fund athletes who are competing in the Paralympics. Today, we are joined by Kelly Brush, founder of the foundation, as well as Eric Newby of Nashville, Illinois. He's the co-captain of the U.S. Paralympic wheelchair rugby team. This will be his third Olympic Games. Kelly and Eric, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Kelly, tell us about the foundation. Why did you start it?
Yeah, so I started the Kelly Brush Foundation back in 2006. I was a ski racer. I grew up ski racing here in Vermont. I was racing for Middlebury College, and I fell and hit a lift tower and broke my back and sustained a spinal cord injury. After that happened, I thought that I wasn't going to be able to do sports anymore and I wasn't going to be able to be active, which was a huge part of my life and how I felt like I was defined. And when I learned about adaptive sports and actually tried the equipment for the first time, it really changed my perspective on what my life could be and made me realize that I could still be the same person and be, you know, live the same life that I always wanted to live. So that was, you know, within a few months after my accident. And so I decided to start the Kelly Brush Foundation to give other people opportunities to have access to adaptive sports, because I also saw how many barriers there were to getting into adaptive sports and how powerful that was. So we started the KBF back in 2006. So we've done it for 18 years now. And we've been helping people all along the way get into adaptive sports in all sorts of different ways.
Amazing. Well, tell us about what you do to support Paralympic athletes in particular.
Yeah, so our biggest program, we help people get into sports in all sorts of different ways, but our biggest program is a grant program. So it's called the Active Fund. And basically people apply to us to help get adaptive sports equipment of their own. So for anybody who's participating in most sports in the Paralympics, you have some kind of equipment that you need to use. So a specialized wheelchair or a hand cycle or something like that. And that equipment is so expensive. So the KBF is able to break down that barrier and give grants to help pay for part or all of that equipment. And we're doing that for people all across the board. So our grants go to people who, you know, moms who want to bike around the neighborhood with their kids, or, you know, the person, the weekend adventurer who wants to go backcountry skiing in Alaska, or the Paralympic hopeful who's like dying to make, you know, the U.S. rugby team and go to the Paralympics. So we help everybody, and it's really fun. This time of year, it's so fun to be able to see the athletes going to the Paralympics and people making the teams and just really excited to be chosen, and knowing that we had a small part in their journey is really awesome for me.
For folks like Eric Newby, our guest, the co-captain of the Paralympic wheelchair rugby team for the United States. Eric, tell us a little bit about the equipment that you need to do the sport that you love.
Yeah, so we have very specialized chairs. They range from anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 and up, honestly. And my chair specifically lasts about 2 years at the international scene. We beat them up here at playing rugby. And so they get cracks and they start falling apart. And you can fix them, but then they don't roll straight or they don't roll as well. And at this level, every play matters, every second matters, and you want to be on the best equipment to play your best. And whether you're coming in for a tryout or you're performing with the team on court, and organizations like Kelly Brush honestly make a huge difference. So if you need new equipment, you can reach out to them and they will definitely help you out. And for me, I had a 3-year-old chair that was cracked and broken and then just wasn't quite right. And I was struggling with it and I reached out to them. And now I have a brand new chair heading into the Paris Games, and it's a huge help.
How does a rugby chair differ from a wheelchair that somebody uses solely to get around, not to play a specific sport?
Yeah, it's completely different. So our wheels are really angled out. We call it camber, and it's for stability and speed and to be able to turn really quickly and then push really fast. And then we sit way lower in it because we carry the ball on our lap. And then the front of the chairs are built for contact. So they have these big metal wings out front, and they're kind of just, they're like a snowplow. They're built to they'll blow through other chairs and flip people over and then score goals. So.
Whew. Braver than I. Rugby is a rough sport. Kelly, I'm curious, have you ever harbored Olympic dreams yourself?
It's so interesting. I get that question a lot, actually. So when I got hurt, I was a sophomore in college, and I was skiing in Division I, so I was skiing at a pretty high level. You know, as a little kid, I always dreamed of being in the Olympics. My mom was an Olympian, actually, in alpine ski racing. But when I got hurt, you know, the thing that I realized, especially as I started to learn to ski again, was what I loved about skiing was the culture of skiing and being with my friends and family and being outside and on the mountain, and the time and effort it was going to take to put into, you know, getting back to the Olympics in skiing in particular, but anything else was going to be so great that I was like, I've got a lot of other hopes and dreams, and I wanted to, you know, finish college and do all that. So I never really dreamed of doing the Paralympics, but it's a fun one to watch other people do.
I bet. Yeah. And I'm sure the Kelly Brush Foundation supports athletes who are going to both the summer and Olympic Games.
Yes. Yeah, totally. We support all seasons, all sports, anything that you can call adaptive sports equipment. We help with that.
Mm. Well, Eric, I would love to hear a little bit more about your origin story with wheelchair rugby. How did you first get into the sport?
Yeah, pretty lucky happenstance story, honestly. So I got hurt in 2006, the night of high school graduation, actually. And so I just finished my high school athletic career. I was a football player, basketball player, weightlifter, everything. And I was a big guy. I'm 6'5", I was 240. And when I was in the hospital, I lost a bunch of muscle, lost all my weight. And I just wanted to, like, get out of the rehab scene and go lift weights and clear my head. And I went to a gym in St. Louis that's built for people in wheelchairs. And so I went there, and this lady walked up to me and she just said, "Let me see your hands." And I was like, "That's a weird question." And so she looked at my hands, and to play wheelchair rugby, you have to be a quadriplegic. You have to have impairment in all four limbs. And so she saw my hands and she's like, "Hey, I'm the coach of the St. Louis team. You should come try to play." And so I left rehab a couple weeks later. Instead of driving home, I drove straight to practice and started playing 5 weeks after I got hurt, and haven't stopped for 18 years. So,
wow. 5 weeks after your injury. That's amazing.
Yeah.
How does the U.S. team come together? I imagine you're from all over the country. Do you meet up to have practices? How does that work?
Yeah, so I'm actually at training camp right now. We meet once a month for however long in Birmingham, Alabama, at a place called Lakeshore Foundation. They've been the home of USA Rugby since USA Wheelchair Rugby for, I don't know, forever, since the 90s. And so, yeah, we fly out here, meet up, and right now we're here for the next week. It's our last training camp before we head over to Paris, and we just play rugby all day, every day. We have 2 3.5-hour practices every day, and then we have film and sports psychology and medical treatment if you need it at the night. We have everything. So, yeah, it's a packed schedule for the next week.
Mm. Wow, that's amazing. How are you feeling about the team's chances this year?
Good, really good. We're currently ranked number 2 in the world. Our team looks great. The world has caught up. The world is more competitive now than they've ever been. Anybody that's at the Paralympics with the top eight in the world has a really good chance of medaling or winning. And it's going to be super competitive, super fun. And I'd really encourage people to watch. It's a really exciting sport to watch.
Well, we'll be very excited to tune in and cheer you on. Kelly, Eric mentioned a couple different organizations that he's relied on over the years to be able to do this sport that he loves, the Kelly Brush Foundation included. Could you talk to us a little bit about kind of that landscape of like nonprofits, organizations, businesses that work specifically in the adaptive sports area and how important those are to athletes?
Yeah, totally. I mean, one of the most important steps along this journey are adaptive sports programs. So these are programs that are all over the country, in every state, and they help people with disabilities get out and be active. We work with them a lot because there's a huge component of, you know, somebody gets hurt and or has a disability either from birth or whatever, but they want to try a new sport, and it's not just like, you know, signing up at your local rec department. You need to figure out how you can actually do this, what sports are available, how you can try it and see if you like it. So these adaptive programs are really, really specialized and do a really incredible job of teaching people what they can do and how they can do it. And here in Vermont, we work with Vermont Adaptive a lot. They are a fabulous organization, and we're really lucky to have them here. But we, you know, we'll work with people all across the country. And for a lot of people who come to us for support, if they're not quite ready for their own equipment, there's a lot of other programs that we have. So things like camps that we put on to help people get into sports, and an online platform that we call the Active Project that teaches people about adaptive sports and what it looks like and where they can go. And through that, you can connect to adaptive programs around the country so that you can try out sports and learn about them. And then when you're ready for your own equipment and you've learned, you know, what you like and what kind of equipment you want, then you can come to us for a grant as well. So, yeah, there's a huge network. I mean, it also starts with rehabs, hospitals that have rehabs that get people started in adaptive sports. So, There's a whole network of support for people with disabilities to get out and be active. And, you know, none of us could do it alone.
Well, it seems like in Vermont, there are a number of organizations like Vermont Adaptive, like yours. We had a show recently about sailing organizations, help people get out on the water, who use wheelchairs. There's a number of these organizations here. But I imagine that there are still a lot of barriers for folks who want to get into a sport, might not even know that they can play a sport. What would you like to see change in this region in particular to make sports more accessible?
Well, I think that's a really big question. there's a lot of different ways that you can go about it. I think one of the most important things is inclusivity in the places that we recreate, and making it easy for people with disabilities to be included and involved in all of recreational activities. And what that means is, like, yes, we may be doing things a little bit differently, but as much as possible, having not segregating out, this is the place where you can go if you have a disability and you want to participate, and this is the place if you're able-bodied and you want to participate. We've been doing a lot of work in this in the mountain biking community, by making trails more universally accessible. And we've been doing this work through the Kelly Brush Foundation, through Vermont Adaptive, and through VEMBA to really make sure that trails out there work for adaptive mountain bikes so you can go and bike with your friends. There's a new network of trails called the Driving Range over by Bolton, and it was built from the ground up to be universally accessible. And it's like really awesome trails. And the feedback we get always is the trails are so much better when they're made accessible to everybody, for everyone, not just for adaptive riders. So it's stuff like that that I think really makes a big difference and helps to normalize adaptive sports.
Yeah. And Eric, we're talking specifically about Vermont right now, but I'd love to hear from you being in another part of the country. You're in Illinois. How do you think the situation where you live is similar or different to what you're hearing from Kelly about adaptive sports in Vermont?
Yeah, you know, it's a growing trend. There is a lot of inclusivity that's trying to happen. It's kind of a slow snowball rolling down the mountain, but it's definitely picking up traction. There's an incredible organization in St. Louis. I'm right across the river from St. Louis. It's called the Disabled Athlete Sports Association, and it's the local St. Louis Paralympic Club. And they host all kinds of different events, and it's very similar where they have a ton of different chairs, a ton of different equipment that if you don't know what you want to do, you can go there and kind of show them what you're able to do, and they can point you in a direction of something that might be fun to try. And they have equipment, so you don't have to go spend thousands of dollars to get your own equipment to start. And then when you find your niche and you get moving, then you contact organizations like Kelly Brush and kind of get the equipment you know you need, and you get it customized for yourself, and that takes you to a whole nother level. But yeah, it's definitely gaining traction in big city areas, which is awesome. And you can always call those organizations if you're traveling to those cities and say, hey, I want to do this while I'm there. Can I use a bike? And most of the time they're very accepting of that. So it's definitely growing, and it's definitely awesome to see.
Eric Newby of Nashville, Illinois, is the co-captain of the U.S. Paralympic wheelchair rugby team. He's headed to Paris soon to compete in the Paralympic Games. Eric, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck. We'll be cheering you on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And Kelly Brush is the founder of the Kelly Brush Foundation that supports athletes with spinal cord injuries. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us. It was really a treat to finally get to meet you in person.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was great.
Well, coming up, we're going to shift tacks a little bit, head into the food world in Vermont. We'll be speaking with a food writer from 7 Days about some big news in the world of restaurants. That's in just a moment on Vermont Edition. Stay with us.